All right, part two, the sequel. A fifth person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, today I was talking to someone who was sure about existence of awareness, was sure about the existence of awareness, not simply as a concept. Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Jean Klein, Muji, Sailor Bob Adamson, all the big guns are talking about awareness. The Buddha knew about awareness from the Upanishads and the Samkhya philosophy, but didn't accept this view about awareness, although there are some places in the sutras where he speaks about an awareness beyond this world. I used to believe in awareness and even try to persuade myself it is my real nature. We can speak about something unchanging, formless, with the ability to be aware of objects, but in my own experience, there is only experiencing. If I don't think about awareness, there is only the inexplicable event of this moment. Even Ashtavakra is saying we are pure awareness. So what is pure awareness? Is it the inexplicable event or happening right now, or is it that which knows all objects? I feel more authentically myself since I heard you say we are the event of this moment. If this is what the word awareness points to, then okay. But if it points to that which is beyond phenomena, then I can understand this view, but I prefer the perspective you share." Thank you for the teaching. All right. Well, the first aspect of this question that arises, or the first thing that arises in response to this question is, let's be very clear about what Ramana Maharshi was saying, about what Nisargadatta Maharaj was saying, about what Jean Klein was saying. Muji, I don't know. Sailor Bob Adamson, I don't really know his teaching. But let's be very clear about what they were saying ultimately about awareness. So lots of teachers use the word awareness, and usually they will attempt to, or a lot of non-dual teachers will use the word awareness, and they will attempt to specify a difference between the usual idea we have about awareness or personal consciousness, the difference between that and what they're talking about. What they're talking about is an impersonal awareness, a pure awareness. Now, this is very different from what we usually consider to be awareness. Now, I know that in the case of Ramana Maharshi, he used a number of different terms. So, one of the terms he used as being the equivalent to the word awareness is the word existence or being. So, in that situation, right away, the word awareness takes on a different aspect because if awareness is existence itself, existence, the sense of existence is just the feeling that something is happening in this moment. If that's awareness, it's pretty clear that it's not what we usually consider to be awareness, and it's not usually what we consider to be consciousness. Nisargadatta Maharaj also, throughout most of his life, he used the words consciousness and awareness. However, not too long before he died, he was giving a teaching in a very different way. And the last book, as far as I know, that came out of his teachings was something called Consciousness and the Absolute. And in that, even though he continued to use the words consciousness and he used the words awareness, he began more specifically to point out that this was an indefinable happening. That even if you use the word consciousness, you can't know consciousness through a concept. And ultimately, he was pointing out that right now you have the feeling that you are a vital liveliness. There is the vital happening of this moment. If you don't have any label for it whatsoever, this sense of something happening makes itself obvious without any kind of movement of the intellect. There's simply a basic feeling that something's happening right now. And you can't ignore the fact that there is a feeling that something is happening right now. And even if you don't call it anything, there is the feeling that something's happening right now. That's our most basic sense of existence. Now, when you start to say, I am, that's adding something to that basic event, or it seems to add something to this basic feeling that something is happening. Now we're calling it an I or a me, and we're saying that we are existing. When in fact, even the feeling of existence comes and goes. So right now there's a feeling of existing, but tonight in deep sleep, apparently what we call deep sleep, there won't be the feeling of existing. So whatever this is, whatever this underlying actuality is, sometimes it feels like it's existence and sometimes there isn't the feeling of existence. So ultimately in this last portion of his teaching, Nisargadatta made a very specific point. He said, I used to think I was consciousness working through the body and that everything was contained in this consciousness, but that consciousness is just another concept, another meaningless concept, and that the actual vital happening of this moment can't be described in any way whatsoever. And he would say, you can't come to the big self, self with a capital S, through a concept. It's simply the acknowledgement of this vital dance that seems to be happening in this moment. It has no particular form. Again, in this last portion of his life, he would very specifically point out that whatever this is that seems to be happening right now, it has no particular name, and that happening existed before the names got added to it. So that he also points out that an infant doesn't have a head full of labels, but the infant has the feeling that something's happening. And that we are this vital play, this vital liveliness of this moment that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. It can't be called consciousness. It can't be called awareness. It can't be legitimately called anything at all. So within this question, let's be very clear as to what these people were actually saying. Even if they use the words consciousness and they use the words awareness, if you read their stuff, you will ultimately discover that they were not pointing to something that was definable. Jean Klein would ultimately be talking about energy, but that energy was not something that could be defined. It had no shape. It had no ultimate name. But the other aspect of this question is, be very careful with recorded teachings. Be very careful with trying to get your reality to match what somebody else is saying. This is ultimately asking you to acknowledge what your most basic sense of existence is. And you won't find that in a book. And you're not going to find that in someone else's words. So as this person is pointing out, their most basic sense of this moment is that there's just this happening and there's no way of explaining it. And if we examine what we normally consider to be our understanding of existence, we will discover that what we're talking about is a process, an apparent process, where labels are attached to apparent forms. But every one of us knows in a lifetime of experience that every one of those forms is actually changing. There are no ultimately stable forms anywhere. Even if it's the universe itself, it's moving and shifting and changing. It has entire galaxies being formed, and it has entire galaxies blipping out of existence. that this event, this movement, this dance, that has no particular form, and there's no way of legitimately giving it a name, because when this sense that something is happening in this moment first presents itself, it doesn't come with a label. And it's only after this event has been expressing itself for an apparent amount of time that these labels start being offered. Call this a nose, call that a foot, call that a wall. But all of these labels are simply pointing to a basic event that's totally mysterious. And it doesn't matter how many labels we collect, they always simply point to ultimately a totally mysterious happening. Now, that's not a difficult thing to explore. And I've gone into it in greater detail in other areas on this website. Again, you don't have to look at life this way. You don't even have to be interested in exploring life in this way or exploring these aspects of life. This is only if you're interested. But ultimately, from this non-dual sensibility, it's saying, don't try to find your awakening in somebody else's words. And if you are, and I'm saying, if you are going to use somebody else's words, read them very carefully. Because even if they're using the words awareness and consciousness, it may be that they're using them in a very specific way, which is not the way you would normally use the words consciousness and awareness. And I am specifically pointing out that when Ramana Maharshi said we were pure awareness, or Nisargadatta Maharaj was saying that we are pure consciousness, they're not using those words to define existence. They're using those words to point to the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. And as Ramana Maharshi was saying, call it existence if you want to call it something, or call it this, just the basic sense of being. But ultimately, the answer is not found in concepts. It's the actual happening that's being pointed to. And it's the same thing with Nisargadatta Maharaj. In the days before his death, he was saying, you know, in the past, I thought I was a consciousness working through a body. That's all concept. It's a mistaken concept. There is only a totally unexplainable functioning or dynamic. And the answer, the true self, is not found in a concept. It's this actual event that requires no movement of the intellect to have the feeling that something is happening. Again, the words can't ever really say it purely. The words can only point to this event. Right now, if you drop all the labels that you have for existence, if you don't try to explain the happening of this moment in any way whatsoever, if you make no effort to do it, it still seems as though there's this happening. And thoughts will come and go as an automatic portion of that dynamic, that dance, that unformed flow. Anyway, ultimately, you're not going to find your sense of existence in somebody else's sense of existence or in somebody else's words. This is a simple, you're being asked to acknowledge your simple, you're being asked to acknowledge the simple happening of this moment. And to realize that there's no way that you can ultimately believe it will have a stable form, and there's no way that you can ultimately give it any kind of legitimate name. A sixth person has written in saying, good morning, Daryl. Nisargadatta is reported to have said, I leave my human nature to unfold according to its destiny. I remain as I am. And during the interview with Renata McNay on Conscious TV, she asked you the question, are you happy? Your response was something like, sometimes there is happiness and sometimes sadness, but I am not concerned. Now, I know that there isn't a you in the way most people refer to this word, that there isn't a personal Daryl or Mary or George or Robert. As you so eloquently say, there is only this movement. My question is, what is being referred to by saying, I am not concerned? It seems to infer that Daryl is somehow outside of this movement in order to comment on it. And what is your response to Nisargadatta Maharaj's statement regarding the destiny of the human being? Is there an apparent script inside the apparent storylines that apparently has to be played out? Thank you very much. Okay, let's begin with my interview with Renata. So Renata asked me at some point, are you happy? Now, it seems as though within spiritual realms, there is a feeling that we're doing this in order to be happy. We're doing these spiritual practices, these spiritual explorations, in order to ultimately be happy. And that's what everybody's ultimately wanting. They want to have a profound realization of existence that leaves them happy all the time. And so when we use a word like happy, my own sense of it is, you know, a momentary event where there is a good feeling, and at other times there are events where the feeling doesn't seem to be so good. So I responded. I said, sometimes there is happiness, sometimes there is sadness, but I'm not concerned with that, because with this sense of existence as this great unformed dance that I'm not doing, with the realization or the sense that whatever I seem to be is simply the expression of this larger event, that I do not exist as something outside this unformed dancing event, that I'm simply a portion of that. With that realization, there can't ultimately be any concern about how this is going to express itself, because, like, and be very careful with that, because you can feel badly about certain situations, apparently. You can feel badly about your actions in a certain situation, even though you know that you ultimately weren't doing it. Life may express you, apparent you, in a way that you do feel badly about your behavior. But underlying that, or surrounding that, is the ultimate sense that there's nothing that could be done about that, that that is ultimately the dance of existence, the dance of the great spirit, the flow of the Tao. Ultimately, all of this is this great unexplainable flow that is simply flowing spontaneously or flowing automatically. So whatever presents itself ultimately with this realization is seen to be the dance of this greater event and not the personal doing of some separate individual. So I made the comment, I am not concerned about that. Again, when we hear somebody speak, when we hear somebody apparently express themselves, we have to be very careful with how we understand what it is they're saying. So this word I, the word I is simply a pointer. Now, some people use the word I or me, and it's pointing to their feeling that they are an invisible awareness living in an actual body, and that actual body lives in a world of things. And that's how they use the word I. So if they use the word I, it's pointing to some imagined invisible awareness that's inside their head and it's looking out at the world. When apparent me uses this word I, that's not what it's pointing to. The word I, to me, can ultimately only point to a totally unexplainable happening. So if I say, I did this today, or I did that today, the word I is pointing to a totally unexplainable functioning, a totally unexplainable happening that has no particular form. It can't be explained in any way whatsoever. It's just an event that's taking place. And in my apparent day-to-day life, I'm dealing with other human beings and we have these apparent conversations. So most people aren't even interested in a non-dual perspective. So when I'm having a conversation, this unexplainable process that I apparently am, or this totally unexplainable event that's taking place, within that there isn't any ultimate concern about what's going to be expressed, because it, whatever's happening will just happen the way it happens. Now, there isn't anyone personally guiding that. There isn't anything that's separate from existence and influencing its movement. Whatever urge we have to influence life in a certain way, that urge is already the expression of the movement. So it's the movement expressing, it's the totally unexplainable movement. That urge is, again, a totally unexplainable dance or happening or dynamic or vitality, however you want to point to it. That urge is a totally unexplainable vitality doing what it does automatically. And that is what we might ultimately say is, or what we might describe as, the dance of existence, the unformed ocean of existence, the flow of the Tao, the dance of the unformed. So everything we are is an expression of that. We don't exist as anything outside of that, the dance of that, whatever that is. That, and I don't mean the that is somehow separate from the dancing. The dancing is the that. So we don't exist as anything outside of that dancing. And if you have that realization, the word I takes on a totally different connotation. Somebody else might be pointing to the idea that there is some invisible thing called awareness inside an apparent head, and that awareness is looking out at an external world. But if you have this realization, the sense that there is only this great unexplainable happening, the word I can only point to that unexplainable happening. And unfortunately, no matter how clearly you use words, they carry an inherent misconception or an inherent inability to clearly express what's going on here, because it's ultimately saying that these ideas cannot explain what's going on here, and no matter how clearly we use them, there is an inherent mistake in the description. So from a non-dual perspective, they're only used to point, they're not used to explain. And so it is that from this, Nisargadatta Maharaj said, I leave my human nature to unfold according to its destiny. So even though he ultimately knew there was no way to explain the formless dance of existence, basically he's saying there is simply this formless dynamic, this vital dance, just happening spontaneously. There isn't anyone making it happen. There isn't anyone influencing its movement. So it's basically expressing its own nature. It's just happening the way it happens. Now, he's saying it's going to flow the way it's going to flow. Whatever it does, it does. Now, that ultimately can't be described as determined behavior. It can't be described ultimately as destiny or fate, because what it's saying is there's a totally unexplainable event just freely expressing itself. It's just happening. However, there is the apparent world of form, and that apparent world of form in relation to this ultimate formless dance, that world of form is the expression of that formless dance. And it is moving according to the nature of that formless dance. So, in one way, you might say these forms have a destiny, because these apparent forms are moved according to the nature of this formlessness, this formless, inexplicable dynamic. However, if you do have this realization, there may be the realization that the forms don't actually exist. That's a fantasy. There is only the free expression of something that cannot be explained in any way whatsoever. It's simply a formless dance, an inexplicable, unexplainable dynamic, movement, an action, a dance, a flow. And that's simply an event eventing. So if there is that realization, the realization that there is only this unexplainable eventing simply happening spontaneously, it just happens, there can't ultimately be any concern over what it will ultimately express. Even though on a day-to-day basis it may feel painful, it seems to have all kinds of forms, it seems to be presenting unpleasant situations, even with the realization of this formless dance, it will still on a day-to-day basis seem to have form. The mind will label some of that form pleasant, other portions it will name unpleasant. There may be sad feelings about our apparent behavior. There may be bad feelings about our inherent behavior. But underlying all of that, or surrounding all of that, however you want to point to this, is the fact that all of that is a totally inexplicable happening, and there is no actual form influencing that happening. There is only the free expression of that. So if you come to see yourself to be this event, and to realize that ultimately you are the inexplicable happening, you aren't influencing how you express yourself. You are simply an inexplicable expression, an inexplicable happening. There can't ultimately be any bottom line concern over how it expresses itself. It just does whatever it does. So again, with Nisargadatta Maharaj, he's saying, I leave my human nature to unfold according to its destiny. I leave my apparent form to be expressed by the nature of this larger formless event. It will play out in whatever way it plays out. So all of these apparent forms are unfolding according to the nature of this formless dance. And there's no way of saying what the nature of this formless dance is. There's no way of saying what that ultimately is. So he says, I remain as I am. I remain as I actually am. I am this formless dance. And again, if you want a very clear expression of this from Nisargadatta Maharaj, pick up the book Consciousness and the Absolute. And initially in that book, he will be still be using the word consciousness. He will still be using the words awareness. And he'll be saying, you are this consciousness, you are this awareness. But towards the end of the book, he starts saying, look, these words are just concepts. You cannot come to realization through a concept. It's an acknowledgement of a dynamic functioning, a vital liveliness the basic happening of this moment, and it's just happening the way it happens. So again, his ultimate sense of what he is this unexplainable dynamic. So he's unconcerned about the apparent forms that are unfolding to the nature of this unexplainable dynamic, because he knows ultimately those forms are not what's actually going on. And if we enter the world of form, we will ultimately have to acknowledge something like determinism or destiny, because the fact is we don't create our body and brain, we don't create our basic needs, we don't create our basic interests, we don't create our concerns, we don't create our talents or lack of talent, we don't create our abilities or our lack of abilities. All of that is very obviously within the world of apparent form. All of that is simply the expression of nature. So if we stay within the world of apparent form, we will start talking in terms of destiny or fate. But to acknowledge that those apparent forms are not the truth, that there is a vital dynamic, a lively dance that's simply happening the way it's happening, then we're outside the world of form, we're outside the world of a life journey, we're outside the world of ideas of cause and effect. There is only the totally wild, exotic expression of this, whatever this is. Again, this is not saying you have to see life in this way. This is simply offered for your consideration. This is simply one of the expressions of existence. Whether you relate to it or not isn't really ultimately that important. All right, a seventh person has written saying, "Hello, I live in Turkey. Your clear expression let me leave behind some assumptions which I wasn't aware of until I read your book. I've finished dismantling the fantasy, and it's with me wherever I go. Thank you. My question is, how and why do we differentiate what seems to be our normal and voluntary actions from things which seem involuntary and we have no control over, like tics or hiccups? I can hold my breath for a few seconds, but I don't know when the next hiccup will come, and I can't hold it when it comes. Why do we take ownership for some of these experiences and some not, though they are all experienced through the body? Thank you so much." Ultimately, I can't explain why that happens, and I will go further than that and say that's not actually happening. Even the storyline that there's somebody here who's has this mistaken impression of existence, that's just a fantasy as well. From a non-dual perspective, it's saying there isn't any way of saying what's happening here. So again, from the Ashtavakra Gita, ultimately it starts to negate all of the ideas, and it says, how can you possibly describe or define what's happening here? It has no form. Objects do not exist in it. Let's see. Yeah, I can't remember exactly how the line goes, but it's saying that there are no objects to begin with. That's an illusion, that all apparent objects are actually ultimately a movement like a wave in an ocean, and that the finite forms have no actual substance. They're always moving on to something else. So ultimately, this is saying, like, with this realization, there is only a totally mysterious happening doing what it does. And so it's not that there was somebody who had a mistaken impression, and then there was this realization, and now that there is a true understanding of existence. It's that with this realization, there is the acknowledgement that there's no way of saying what's happening here in any way whatsoever. So even the story that there was somebody who had a mistaken impression, and is now awakened, that's a fantasy as well. Once there's the acknowledgement that there is a totally indefinable happening, that's it, period. There's just a totally indefinable happening. Now that will continue to express apparent storylines and apparent forms and all of that, but it's acknowledged that all of those storylines are ultimately false, that there is just this spontaneous vitality, this formless dynamic, this unexplainable happening, simply happening. However, if we want to examine our storylines, if we go into the storylines, the apparent storylines, it doesn't make sense to say that we're ultimately in charge of our life, because, as I've pointed out, we don't create our body, and even within our storylines, we know we don't create our body, we don't create our brain, we don't create the way they function. If we have an urge to move in a certain direction, or to apparently do something, an urge to apparently do something, even that urge we don't create. We don't create our needs, we don't create our interests, we don't create our concerns, we don't create our abilities and our lack of abilities. So even within the storylines, it's quite obvious that we're not in charge if we examine it. And again, I don't know the reason why, but for some, within the storylines, there is a tendency to ignore the fact that we already know we don't create our body and brain, we don't create the way they function, we don't create our needs, our interests and concerns. Instead, we just say, I had this desire to do this, and so I worked hard and I did this, and so it was my doing. However, if we examine that, we find that that's totally ridiculous, because if you have an urge to do something, if you want to do something, you haven't created that want. And if you had the ability to apparently do that, you didn't create that fundamental ability. There are lots of people who may have a want, but they don't subsequently have any ability to follow through on that, no matter how much they want it. They also did not create that want. So, for instance, somebody wants to have a family, and somebody else wants to throw a basketball through a hoop better than anybody else on the face of the planet. And they will give up everything in order to simply live in relation to that basketball. Now, it's not that one person decided they wanted a family, and another person decided they wanted to spend their whole life pursuing basketball. It's that one person was compelled by having this interest in a family to apparently move in that direction, and another person was compelled by having this interest in basketball to move in this other direction, to apparently move in this other direction. If you really could create your wants, then you could just snap your fingers and get rid of certain wants, ones that you consider to be unhealthy. And you could just snap your fingers and have a whole different set of wants. Instead of being a starving artist, you could just want to be a successful businessman. And it would happen. But you can't just snap your fingers and want that. What you love and what you don't love, you don't get to create. What you have an interest in and what you don't have an interest in, you don't get to create. So ultimately, I have no idea why it is that in the world of apparent forms, in general, people claim power over certain actions. They claim that that's their doing, and other things, they claim that they don't have control over. One is a set of voluntary actions, the other is a set of involuntary actions. It seems to be that for whatever reason, most apparent people do not have an interest in having a big enough view of their behavior to realize that all of their behavior is the movement of nature. Why they don't have that interest, I don't know. Ultimately, once again, even this story of people who have the feeling that some of their behavior is voluntary and some of their behavior is involuntary, ultimately doesn't make any sense. Those storylines do not describe what's actually going on here. There is a happening. If we sit down, we make no effort to do anything, we drop all efforts to describe the happening of this moment, we drop all efforts to do anything, the happening that we are continues to happen, and it will play out in whatever way it plays out. Apparent thoughts will come and go. Apparent urges will continue to arise. Some will compel a certain apparent action, and there's no way of ultimately saying what any of that actually is. All right, coming to the last question, number 8. Hi, Daryl. Patanjali is advising in his Yoga Sutras, when unwholesome thoughts arise, to cultivate their opposite. The same advice was also given by the Buddha. Will you please comment on this? As I've said in other situations, a book of recorded teachings from any particular tradition, their particular scriptural collection will contain a mixed bag of teachings. So one of the unfortunate things that happens in remembering an apparent great teacher's teaching is that people want to record everything. So they'll record those moments where that teacher gave their, you know, what you might consider to be their most profound teaching, but they'll also record all the situations in which the teacher set aside the most profound teaching because they felt they were dealing with somebody who needed a different type of teaching, and instead they were given more of a psychological teaching. So one very interesting example of this would be that in the Bible, Christ's disciples challenged him at one point and said, why are you teaching all of these parables? Like, why don't you give the people the true teaching? And Christ's response, as it's recorded, is that I don't give them the real teaching because they don't have the ability to understand the real teaching. So I give them parables instead. And then he says to his disciples, to you I give the real teaching. I don't give the real teaching to anybody else. Now that's a very direct expression of Christ within the Bible, as Christ's teaching is recorded. So you have this mixed bag of teachings within all of these scriptural collections. The Buddha also gave any number of teachings, trainings to his monks and nuns. And ultimately, within that training, he would state that all of this is just given to you in order to let you explore what's actually happening in life. And it may or may not happen that you have certain realizations about what's actually going on in life. And you'll realize that what you think is going on is not going on, and that ultimately you may discover that there is the happening of existence, but there isn't anybody doing that happening. That ultimately it is an unformed event or dynamic, and you know, he said it's flowing like a river, and that ultimately you don't exist as anything separate from that event. And that ultimately there's no way to say what that event is. So he said ultimately that, descriptions about physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, and states of consciousness, all of that is ultimately untrue. And furthermore, in all of his recommended ways of living, the Eightfold Path, somewhere in the scriptures, I can't remember exactly where it is, but he states that you're not even on the path until you have your awakening. That you can't really actually use his Eightfold Path in any kind of truly skillful way until you're awakened to a certain degree. So all of those recommended ways of living would have to be considered in relation to this sense of existence being a larger, unexplainable happening. And that you can't really use these teachings skillfully unless you have that understanding. The same thing is stated in the teachings of Tibetan Buddhism. So you have the great guru Padmasambhava, and he gives his teaching on reincarnation. And then he gave another teaching which he didn't even give to people. He hid that teaching in a cave. And ultimately that teaching was discovered, I don't know how many hundreds of years later, that teaching was discovered. It was verified to be a teaching of Padmasambhava. And Padmasambhava said all that teaching about reincarnation can't even be used skillfully unless you realize it's a total illusion. That it's just a fantasy. So that other teaching that he hid, the name of it has been translated in a number of different ways, but one of the main ways is self-liberation through seeing with naked awareness. Now that was supposed to be a companion teaching to the whole teaching of reincarnation and all of the bardo states and all of that. And this companion teaching was saying you can't use that reincarnation teaching skillfully unless you realize it's a total fantasy. So again, be very careful about thinking that you're going to find a set of teachings within a collection of scriptures and that that set of teachings is going to somehow be a coherent teaching, when in fact every collection that I've run across has been a mixed bag of conflicting teachings. Many of them saying there is only God, or there is only the flow of nature, there is only the unformed dance of existence, and then together with that you have teachings that are saying if you don't spend every waking moment watching your behavior and controlling your behavior, you will never overcome your defilements as a human being. So on one page they're saying there is only the dance of God or the expression of God, and on another page it's saying you are defiled and you will not find your way into God's heaven unless you work really hard to overcome all of your defilements. And so you have, even like within the Christian histories, you've got the vast majority of priests and commentators on the Christian teaching saying there is sin, you are a sinner, you have to work hard to overcome your sin. And then you have other Christian commentators, the great mystics, Teresa d'Avila, Meister Eckhart, Juliana of Norwich, saying ultimately there can't possibly be any sin because everything is God's doing. And in fact, you even have Paul explaining that, or more than that, you actually have all kinds of statements within the Bible that are saying man does not direct his or her life, no one in humankind directs his or her life in any way whatsoever. And actually, just let me pause this and I'll go get some statements that direct statements from the Bible, some of my favorite direct statements from the Bible. So, I think it's safe to say that for most of us, the general sense we have of Christianity is that there is a teaching that we are children of God and that we are somehow essentially sinners and that we have to work hard to overcome our defilements as human beings in order to enter the kingdom of heaven. So, and there are lots of statements within the Bible that would give that indication. Excuse me, would give that indication. However, I'd like to read out a few statements that point to quite a different teaching. So here are some direct quotations from the Bible. Many are the plans in a man's heart, but it is God's purpose that will prevail. A man plans, but God determines his steps. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing can be taken away. Man's life is not his own. Man does not direct his own steps. A man's steps are directed by the Lord. And I'd like to point out that at this time, the word man, it's the general word for humankind, so that includes women. A man's steps are directed by the Lord. You cannot make even one hair white or black. Even though we appear to in the salon, we don't actually make the essential nature of that hair white or black. Who can straighten what God has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider this: God has made one as well as the other. The wind blows wherever it blows. You cannot tell where it is coming from or where it is going. It is the same for everyone born of spirit. God gives all men life and breath and everything else. I, Jesus, do nothing on my own. My teaching is not my own. No one can come to me unless the Father draws him. No one can come to me unless the Father has enabled him. Look at the birds and the flowers. What do they do to be what they are or get what they get? Do not obsess over what you might eat and drink and wear. First seek God's kingdom, and these other things will be given to you as well.